Entrepreneur Weekly interviews the brilliant leaders of today in order to provide a stepping stone of wisdom on the journey to personal business ownership. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Well, joining me right now is Evan Goldberg. He is the co-founder of NetSuite, which has been recently purchased by Oracle. And we're sitting here in the Blue Mic studio at a big conference. And Evan, you were the keynote this morning. And I was really impressed with what you said. But what I took away was what you guys are really doing. If I could just for a moment, in the mind's eye of so many entrepreneurs, is to say that you're putting a kind of a soul and a heart and a backbone to something that is so important to the company, you know, with software and keeping track and control of your monies. And I don't even know how to explain. This has been my biggest problem for the last 40 years of my business life. And all of a sudden I see that you guys are really coming up with some amazing solutions. So hats off to you, first of all, for your growth, what you guys have done. Congratulations also for 20-year anniversary that you just passed. Maybe you can talk a little bit about what the next 20 years will be like and what you're going to hope to achieve.
The vision of the company 20 years ago really relates to what you said. It was running a company and not necessarily really knowing what's going on and having a lot of information in some systems that as an entrepreneur, as the leader, you may not actually be using. You may only get periodic reports from. And this desire to really have my finger on the pulse of my company at all times. And anytime, anywhere, obviously, you know, with the advent of the cloud, and we were one of the first sort of cloud business software companies, that was a part of the promise. And when I first saw it up and running for our own business, that we could see the state of our business, the state of our finances, the state of our leads, the state of our pipeline, anytime on in a browser, that was sort of the aha moment. It's like, oh yeah, this is going to work. And so building on that notion of sort of a centralized system, easy to access, that covers all your core operations is still what drives the company. And the next 20 years is just really about doing it better, incorporating great new technologies like machine learning. But at the end of the day, it's about giving great information to help entrepreneurs make great decisions about their business.
So when you started this company on top of a hair salon of some sort and a bar down the street or a liquor store, I mean, it's like, do you remember those days now that you've come this far?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, those are very vivid memories. You know, the all-nighters, and actually my daughter had just been born, so I kind of could track the age of the company just by looking at her, my first daughter. But, you know, the energy that we had then, I continually try, and I think often succeed at recapturing, even, you know, when we're a much bigger company, part of an even bigger company. Many of the original people are still with NetSuite at Oracle and still, I think, have the passion. You might not do quite as many all-nighters, but we're still really, really committed to the original vision. And we remember those great times, but we've had a lot of other great times along the way.
What would you say to the casual viewer right now, the entrepreneur just starting out? What is the difference between NetSuite and other options out there?
Yeah. Well, I think the biggest, you know, it's NetSuite. And I think really our biggest idea at the time, it was seemed like the cloud. But now, of course, you know, that's taken for granted that you're going to implement software in the cloud. And really the idea that I think is resonates through the years is this notion that all your core operations of your business are sort of tracked in one place. And that provides amazing opportunities. Because really, especially when you're an entrepreneurial company, you don't have these silos of your sales department and your receiving department and your finance department and your service department. I mean, people are sort of jacks of all trades. And yet you have these tiny companies, 10, 15, 20 people, they already have like as many systems as they have people. And, you know, that's really the promise of NetSuite is if the information's in one place and it's consistent and you can get at it anywhere, you just have a much better handle on your part of the business, which for entrepreneurs is pretty much, you know, usually every part of the business.
I'm Alan Taylor. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned. There's more Entrepreneur Weekly after these messages. This Discover unstoppable industry influencers who celebrate disruptive thinking and game-changing business strategies on Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Well, joining me right now is Evan Goldberg. He is the co-founder of NetSuite, which has been recently purchased by Oracle. And we're sitting here in the Blue Mike studio at a big conference. You have done a really nice job of putting together a platform for commerce. And maybe you could talk about that.
Yeah. Well, right at the beginning of the company, actually, I mean, it started with a conversation that Larry Ellison and I had, kind of a five-minute phone conversation about what we wanted to do. And it was really his idea to start with accounting, the core of, you know, your company's products and your customers, employees, et cetera, and where the money's going. But I think sales, you know, really for the entrepreneur, the pipeline and how we're doing on closing deals is sort of on the day-to-day, the thing that you most occupy yourself with. And he said, oh, yeah, well, you're going to have to add the front office. And by the way, I mean, a ton of these companies are going to be selling on the web. Mind you, this is 1998. There were web sales, but I think he appreciated right at the beginning that that was going to become sort of essential for it, sort of any product company. And increasingly, it's becoming essential for all types of companies. So we made a very early investment in commerce. In the past, I'd say 5 or 6 years, we've realized that we needed to sort of retool for next generation web commerce and in-store even experiences. And so we kind of threw everything out and started over again. And the results of that, the product's called Suite Commerce, is a cutting edge, fast, flexible solution for e-commerce, similarly for in-store and for B2C, but also for B2B. I mean, the thing is, if you're selling to businesses, you used to be able to get away with fax, or, you know, then maybe it was a bunch of emails and sending them a PDF of the invoice. But that's not really how companies want to interact now. They expect sort of a consumer-like experience, even if they're working in their business environment. So one of the things that I think is most exciting about our commerce capabilities is we've been able to bring it to these B2B companies, whether they be distributors or manufacturers. And you know, so many of these companies are becoming actually B2C and B2B. You know, you have manufacturers that'll sell direct and also sell to distributors. And that's another place that's sort of multi-channel, omni-channel that NetSuite excels.
It's interesting you talk about kind of the speed of growth right now and the speed of change. Something came up recently with some friends. They're talking about the access economy. Young people don't want to own it. They just want to access it, which is going to bring an entire new challenge for you guys. Have you heard about this access economy?
Yeah, I think I've heard about it. You know, like you don't really need a car, you know, that sort of thing. Transportation as a service. Get a car when you want it and, you know, not when you don't want it. I think the challenge for us, we're still going to pretty much insist that customers, you know, buy NetSuite for, you know, a long period of time. No, so I don't know that it's going to affect our business model very much, but I do think that our customers' business models are going to be changing really rapidly. And you're going to see product companies that are going to have to offer their solution as a service, not as a thing. And I think, again, that's where NetSuite excels, because we have great solutions for service companies and great solutions for product companies, which has not often been the tradition among sort of ERP systems. They've really been pretty vertical specific in a lot of cases. There's great ones if you sell things, and there's great things if you sell services. But that whole world is blending together. And we've always said we want to be great for every business model and every type of company. And that really comes to fruition in these next generation business models.
Now, as far as you personally, how has this transition from workaday entrepreneur to, you know, big corporate executive changed your life? Can you still be nimble? I mean, because as entrepreneurs are nimble, right?
It's a great question. And I mean, NetSuite grew from 4 people to 5,000 people when we were acquired by Oracle. We're well over 7,000 people now. We're still really a whole unit, and we feel very similar to how we did, you know, the day after the acquisition. It was kind of like, okay, back to work. And it's really felt very similar to how we were all along. And we do feel that we're extremely nimble. But the reality is, and this is a good thing and a bad thing, there's definitely more inertia when you have a lot of people working on something. It's, you know, turning that ship is a little slower. What that means is that you have to more carefully plan. This is a good thing. and every entrepreneur will experience it. And that's why a lot of entrepreneurs sort of switch off of their home brew, cobble together, you know, shoestring and bubblegum systems to a system that gives them a holistic view. Because you have to plan holistically. You're not right there with every deal anymore. You're not right there with every employee anymore. And employees that are more distant from the, you know, inner sanctum, they don't respond necessarily well to massive changes in strategy. Again, when you're four people and you're all sitting in a room and you're like, okay, forget it, we're going in this direction instead, that's a lot easier to execute. And so getting it right, I think, getting the strategy right and executing it really smoothly and successfully does, there's more of a premium on that as you grow. And every entrepreneur is going to experience that transition. And it has its good elements and its bad elements, but it's life. You know, it's like, again, it's kind of like high class problems when you have a very successful organization that's growing rapidly and now you have to sort of run it as a real business.
It's funny because, you know, after all these 20 years, he used to have a big afro and, you know, now he's already pulled his hair all out. But, hey, thank you very much for spending time with us. NetSuite from Oracle, they've done a fantastic job. You need to check it out.
There's more Entrepreneur Weekly after these messages. You're listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Once again, we're here at Suite Connect at Oracle Open World, and joining us right now from Kiva is Pam Yanchik, and she is the CFO, and what else?
The Global Head of Operations.
This is a big job, and tell the world what Kiva is, because I love this.
Kiva was formed in 2005, and we're a global nonprofit based here in San Francisco, where we connect people through lending to alleviate poverty globally. So we've lent out over $1.2 billion to 70 countries all over the world to the poorest people in the world.
I love this. And you don't charge any interest.
We don't. We don't. And we have over 1,000 borrowers in the United States as well, getting zero interest loans to do everything from little local markets to setting up a janitorial company in Oakland. We also do work with refugees. So there's a woman, Fatima, in Lebanon. She's a Syrian refugee. She and her children fled Syria with the clothes on their back, went to Lebanon with no identity, nothing, no money, nothing. And through the microfinance lending organization in Lebanon, we're able to help her set up a beauty supply shop in Lebanon and really buy high quality beauty goods that she can sell to folks in Beirut.
So you were on stage today, by the way, and I got to hear a little of this story and I said, I've got to talk to her. This is such an interesting thing, and you're hoping that others will hear this story and jump on board and want to get involved, and maybe you could, let's start with that.
Yeah, so Kiva is really, we're looking at loans. So every, of the $1.2 billion that we've lent out through our history, many of them started out with just $25 loans. And because we have an 87% repayment rate, you get money back after you give out the first loan. Money comes back. You loan it out again. It comes back. You loan it out again. And so it's just a virtuous cycle of loaning money to the poorest people in the world, having them repay, giving it back out, adding more money to it. We also work with really an amazing group of business partners, including NetSuite. NetSuite's been a partner of ours for a number of years and has given us their NetSuite product to run Kiva on, which is just such a huge contribution. And they're also a partner giving Kiva cards today, $25 Kiva cards to many of their customers to be able to go on Kiva.org, select a lender, set up their account, and do some lending on Kiva.org.
It's very cool because nonprofits need all the help they can get, and NetSuite recognizes that and donates the product to the nonprofit. So for any of you nonprofits out there, you may reach out to the folks at NetSuite. Tell us the genesis of this whole business, Kiva, and where did it start?
Yeah, so there were two founders back in 2005, and then they joined forces with some additional people, really looking at microfinance institutions and being able to really aggregate loans on Kiva.org, aggregate all of the lending. So again, $25 loans that add up to $1.2 billion over time. So it was a brilliant move. It was so, you know, so based in work to try to alleviate poverty in the world. And it, you know, it started in Uganda with just a few loans, and now it's up to almost 70 countries globally.
I'm also very happy to hear that you guys have not forgotten about the USA, right? Mm-hmm, I mean, that's right. So important. It's a global society in many ways because of the interwebs, I'll call it. And I think that, you know, a lot of times people focus on just one area, but you really spread the love, I could say that.
That's right. Absolutely. There are very, really great borrowers all over the world doing amazing work. You know, I review a lot of the lending and the borrowing that happens, and it just warms my heart. The people at Kiva are so committed to having the impact in the world. I've been very fortunate to work with people that are truly committed to do amazing things in the world. And my colleagues at Kiva are equally committed to really eradicate poverty and to create financial inclusion globally. In September, we announced with the president of Sierra Leone a brand new project leveraging blockchain for 1.7 million adults in Sierra Leone to have both identity as well as credit. So one of the challenges that many people in these countries have is that they might have identity, but they don't have any credit, because most of the credit that they work on is, you know, bartering and borrowing from families. And so we're creating this blockchain infrastructure that allows for both identity and credit so that they can become more financially viable to traditional ways of doing business like banking. So we're so excited. We just got back from Sierra Leone this week, where we talked to the UN agencies, the United Nations agencies, as well as Sierra Leone to kick off this project. Sierra Leone will be our first country, and we hope to sign three new countries in 2019.
Fantastic. Hat tip to NetSuite for working with Kiva. And maybe, again, that website, if anybody else would like to get involved.
Yes, kiva.org, and select based on what's interesting to you, whether it's women, agriculture, U.S. programs. Select anything that's of interest to you and give a loan. $25 makes a huge difference to our recipients.
Pam Yanchek, thank you very much. And you guys make sure you check out kiva.org. I'm Alan Taylor. This is Entrepreneur Weekly.
There's more Entrepreneur Weekly after these messages.
Whether you have a great idea you want to launch or a business you're running that you want to grow, Woman Entrepreneur's powerful Build Like a Woman curriculum of online courses gives you all the tools you need to take your business to the next level. From digital self-paced courses, virtual coaching sessions, and webinars with experts, we power the entire journey, arming women entrepreneurs and leaders with what they need to start, grow, and flourish. Get started today. It's free to start. Enroll now at entrepreneur.com/courses. Again, that's entrepreneur.com/courses.
You're listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Joining us right now from the Golden State Warriors is the CFO, Jennifer Cobble-Quinto. And here we are at Suite Connect at Oracle Open World, part of Oracle's, I don't know, big event, what we'll call it, I guess. I'm learning a whole lot about large and small businesses and how they run and how they use NetSuite. And I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, the Golden State Warriors, a basketball team. And Jennifer, you're going to tell me that a basketball team in an organization like the Golden State Warriors uses NetSuite in the same way that a small business person would?
Yes, I'm going to tell you that. The Golden State Warriors is a business, and we need to manage the business, and NetSuite is our tool for managing our business.
So from what I gathered when you were on stage, you guys actually are going to kind of take it to the next level with the Golden State Warriors. You're going to run it, like you said, like a business, but you're also going to look at the perhaps philanthropic part of what you can be doing better. And I actually think that's quite interesting.
Yeah, you know, we're preparing to scale on all fronts. Not only is the team, the business of the team growing, we're also going to own and operate our own arena. So within the next year, we're going to be opening the Chase Center here in San Francisco. And that's a whole new business line that, you know, we don't currently have. And as you mentioned, our foundation is growing tremendously, and we look for that as well. And we're managing all of that within the NetSuite platform. And all of those businesses have different, you know, revenue streams, different revenue recognition rules, different calendar years. But NetSuite's allowed us to house it all in one place, and to be able to scale and grow all of these entities within one place is really important for us.
Can you do me a favor and back up just a little bit and talk about the Golden State Warriors? Because from what I gathered, again, I'm one of those guys, I keep my head in my own books and I do my own thing. And I've missed a lot of life, I think, being such an intense entrepreneur. But I think there's a special story about the Golden State Warriors I'd like you to share about how you guys have grown in the last number of years.
Yeah, you know, I think it always starts with people. People first. And our CEO, Joe Lacob, who bought the team back in 2010, really stresses that. The secret sauce is around starting with the right people. And he hired Rick Welts, who is a Hall of Famer, came from the NBA. And then Bob Myers, who people here at NetSuite Connect had a chance to meet earlier today. And you could see what an incredible person he is. Bob always says that he recruits for character first when thinking about players for the basketball team. And then tall, because you can't teach tall. I think that that translates to our business side as well. And we really look at that. And then, you know, our ownership group, they're all based in Silicon Valley. They're, you know, they made their fortunes in the VC world. And so they really push us to sort of operate in that space of fast fail and try things and really push the boundaries of the sports business. And they're just not satisfied with the status quo. And I think that culture really reflects itself both on the court in the team's performance, but also our business performance.
It's so interesting to watch this unfold on stage when Bob came out and he was talking to Evan Goldberg, who's the co-founder of NetSuite. And I thought to myself, I am so thrilled to be alive today, to be in this world that we're in, even though it's wackadoodle in so many ways. But I mean, there's so many good things happening. It's like this. For you, is it different than what you're used to in business? You're a CFO. I mean, you're the money person.
I think the end game is a little bit different, because if you're a CFO of a corporation, you've got to deliver profits. Ultimately, you're delivering to your shareholders. When you're the CFO of the Golden State Warriors, and I can only speak for this team and this ownership group, we really look at ourselves as a community asset as well. And so you're not only delivering to the ownership group in terms of, you know, wanting to be cash flow positive and operate the business in sort of the right way, but you also want to win. And so you want to allocate your resources to putting the best product forward. And then you want to support the community, because at the end of the day, this sports moment doesn't last forever. And how do you stay in the hearts and minds of the Bay Area? And that's by being a great neighbor. And that's by being a great community person. And so supporting the organizations throughout the Bay Area is something that we really take seriously. So yeah, it's very different lens as a CFO, because I've got to think about not just the business aspect of it, but how do we, you know, continue and I guess ensure our franchise and our franchise's value here in the Bay.
I love the values there. Tip of the hat for that, by the way. And also, I mean, it's in the good book to love your neighbor. And I think you guys are doing a great job of that. So what are you, I mean, you're here in essence telling the world that NetSuite is a good product. So you must really believe it.
I do. I wouldn't be here if I didn't believe it. You know, I was thinking back to when we were assessing which systems we wanted to go forth with. And we really, you know, honed in on a cloud-based ERP system. And there were a number out there, and they all promised to do everything that we needed. All of them did. What I really appreciated, I think, from NetSuite is not only that the product itself was, I think, user-friendly for my team, and we have a small team, but I think that sense that they were going to be there with us and for us as we went through the journey of implementation, that's really valuable. We look for business partners in our vendors, not just vendors.
How valuable do you think these alliances like this are? I mean, it seems to me like this is the new way of doing business.
Super valuable. I think, you know, you saw it today and NetSuite's sort of value system of social responsibility. That really aligns with, I think, the Warriors' values. And so you want to do business with people that I think align with your values. I think it's really important that we're lockstep. Our brand alignments are great. And I think that that matters.
What are you most proud of about the Golden State Warriors right now?
I think the fact that we value our place in this community and that this investment, and you know, it's not without controversy, this investment in the Chase Center and the move, but it's really for the long term and ensuring that this franchise stays healthy and is rooted here in the Bay. And that's what this is really all about. And I'm really proud that we've made that the forefront of what we're doing.
Well, when the big guy gets up on stage and says one of the most important things to him was learning how to put his phone down and look at the person next to him in those meetings for that couple of minutes to make sure that he's really caring about his team, which includes, you know, the CFO right down to the players, that told me a little bit about the soul of the entire franchise. So, Jennifer, thank you so much.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me.
All right. I'm Alan Taylor. This is Entrepreneur Weekly, and we're seeing a little bit different side of the business world and, you know, a ball club. It's fun.
You're listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Now to talk about something near and dear to my heart, veterans, American veterans. Of course, veterans of foreign wars, as my father is one. He's from England as well. Eric Mitchell, CEO of LifeFlip Media. Eric is the founder of LifeFlip Media and is one of America's leading advocates for veteran entrepreneurs and the warrior class across America. First of all, Eric, thank you very much. I think this is very, very important. Maybe you could tell the world about it real quick.
I'm a Marine Corps veteran. So many proper ways to say you were a Marine, because we're once a Marine, always a Marine.
That's right. Thank you for your service. Right?
It's difficult. We never know what to call ourselves. Marines, as we get older, I'm like, I said former Marine. I got yelled at by a Medal of Honor recipient who served at Iwo Jima. He's like, we don't have former Marines.
That's
like, okay.
Right.
Cool. I'm like, I'll never say that again. So I'm a Marine Corps veteran. I'll age myself. I served in the 90s. So from 94 to 01 is when I served. I got out June of 01 to go into the Sheriff's Academy.
Wow.
In Sacramento. So
awesome.
I served some years in the Corps and built a PR firm after several years in Silicon Valley. So I serve our veterans and military spouses that are building brand and influencers across America. I basically put them on TV. That's
nice.
What I do.
Well,
on national TV.
I'm looking here. It looks like you've worked with brands like the NFL, NBA, MLB, and even Facebook. So, but how do you work with our veterans?
Well, the veterans is I help tell their story to get it out there, because their hardest thing is they're pitching regional media, and I'm working with the national networks, and I want them to get on there to get some exposure. So their awesome brands, their Made in America brands are out there, and you can see what our awesome veterans and male spouses are doing, because they're building some amazing brands. They're on Shark Tank. You see them. They're doing a good job, and it's cool to have them recognized, because if you're going to buy a product, what a better person to buy it from than a veteran or a male spouse, because you know the sacrifice, and they're going to put that. I think their work shows in there, because they put a little bit more behind it, because, you know, we got a little late start in business. Most of us serve into our mid-20s at least.
Right.
So we're building a business, and it's fun to tell their stories, because I get to talk to everybody, not just Marines, which is cool for me. So it's cool to talk to different people and see their different walks of life. It's always amazing talking to Navy SEALs and all those guys. I know you've had some amazing Navy SEALs on your show.
Yeah.
Sal DeFranco, I know, is one of them. You know, these guys have amazing stories. So it's cool to have these stories, and these are awesome Americans doing amazing things and living that entrepreneurial spirit. And to me, that's awesome.
So now you've lived this life, you've had this experience, you haven't forgot about your brothers and sisters in the military and those who have retired, we'll say it, but are always, you know, like you said, always in their hearts, still have brothers and sisters. I know that it's kind of band of the hand in that world. But how do you then work with brands, because that's an intense start, and help them to stick out in a world of crowded, you know, businesses and things that are all trying to stick out? What is the difference between LifeFlip Media and other companies like this?
What I like to do is work on their story and be unique. Coming from the Silicon Valley, that was one thing that I've always learned, because there were so many people when I worked in the Silicon Valley at a startup. I've been acquired 3 times. One of the things I did notice was the story was different. Everybody was the next, say, Groupon or next Facebook, right? We've heard that. Or the next Uber, right? Everybody's building the next Uber. But it was their story that made them different. How have brands do that? So I have them tell a different story. Their struggle to get where they're at. It wasn't always a cakewalk to get there.
Right.
They had to crawl before they can walk. And really have them deep dive into what caused them their success to tell that struggle, because it really resonates with so many business owners out there. And if you look at veterans, for the fact that we've been in a war for the last going on 18 years, over the next 7 years, we have 250,000 active duty become veterans out into our community. And 25% of those, well, historically, if we go off of the last time we had a long war, which was World War II and the baby boomers, 25% of those will become entrepreneurs. They need to have a different story. We have enough t-shirt companies in the veteran world, but how are they going to make their company stick out? Whatever they're building, and tell their story. Mm. And it's fun to do that because they really learn about their brand, and to tell that in-depth story of struggle, how they took it. Because, I mean, they do relate a lot to those famous entrepreneurs and these famous brands we see that started in garages, which is fun to tell them they're very unique. You know, it's pretty cool to, you know, build something in your garage and then turn it into a gigantic store and then grow. And we've seen that with several veteran brands that are out there, and more are doing that. And TV is really the way to get exposure, because everybody's on social, but to get on TV, you have to have a really good story. And when you go on there and you tell your story, you get a whole new audience. It's not just your fellow brothers and sisters and the media family, it's now America buying your product.
Right. I interviewed a gal from London, and she had this voice that sounded like she was about 4 years old, yet she was 40 years old. And so she finally decided to embrace her cartoon-like voice. And, you know, I mean, it's like, man, just embracing your quirkiness, we'll call it, or your story in your case, that's what you're saying, is embrace your story, amplify the story, talk about the story, sew it into the fabric of your life instead of trying to hide it, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, again, a friend of mine who does a company called Fearless Marketing, he taught me something a long, long time ago. He said, the story, the story, the story. In other words, you know, the three most important things about you is the story. So I get that. But many entrepreneurs are afraid to ditch their PR firms and do PR themselves because they're afraid. So I think guys like you and people, you know, like this magazine, Entrepreneur Magazine and the rest, are bringing folks forward that can help them to ditch the PR firms and do these things themselves. Social media is free. You know, I mean, if you want to spend a little money on it and boost it out there, when we come back, maybe you can give some tips for entrepreneurs on how to, you know, kind of do it for yourself and save that money and educate yourself, embrace your quirkiness or whatever it is, and take that, turn it into an asset. We're talking to Eric Mitchell. You can find out more about him, lifeflipmedia.com. I'm Alan Taylor. This is Entrepreneur Weekly.
Listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
All right. We have a man who has a noble cause. He is a man that wants to help entrepreneurs and veteran entrepreneurs, learn how to be more effective in telling their story, using their story to be better entrepreneurs, better business folks. And this is a beautiful thing, and I salute you for that, and your time in the military, and the fact that you were also a police officer for quite a while, I guess, too, right, Eric?
Yes, I did a couple years
in Sac County. So
beautiful. Thank you. Appreciate that. Neither one easy jobs. Makes probably your job today look like a cakewalk as far as, although maybe the fear factor as an entrepreneur may be even greater than busting down walls and chasing bad guys, Eric Mitchell. All right. What I need from you, I need like 4 1-minute pieces of advice on how to help folks tell their story more effectively and do it by themselves without a big PR firm.
Awesome. You know, I have those here. Bill Gates said it best. He said, if I was down to my last dollar, I would spend it on public relations. So I've always kind of taken that from my tech background and run with that as I've built this firm, not a firm, but built as a publicist, helping folks out to always remember how important PR is. And as a startup bootstrapping, you don't have all that money to go into a firm. So what I always tell folks is there's 4 easy steps. One is like know your target audience. You have to deep dive in there, understand who you're talking to, because your story is just going to bounce off the wall if you don't know who you're talking to. So target those audience, those individuals, those groups that have influence, and you know those decision-making powers over your products and services, because obviously those are the ones you're trying to attract. So you want to bring them in and not sound like you're pitching, because to get on TV, to even talk on radio, you want to make sure people understand your story and then bring them in and go, oh, I need that. That's what I want. So I always tell folks, understand who your target audience is. Because once you've identified your target audience, you can then jump into researching their behaviors and, you know, see what publications a lot of those folks are on and then target those. Because you can't just broad base it and go, I just want to pick, you know, go here. You need to target who you're looking for.
Right.
And I think number 2 is a very big one is what's your key messages, right? You know, key messages are those core messages that you want your target audience to hear and remember. You know, Jonah Berger, you know, wrote that famous book about what things go viral. And I've always loved his top of mind, tip of tongue. And that's what I always think a core message is. And I really want people to take that across. What's your core message? So when people think of you in 10 seconds, they know your brand. I mean, we do that with those really big brands, but I want you to do that with your own brand. So people walk into a room, they know who you're talking about. So work on those, you know, for example, your key message for your business can be, you know, is a leader in said industry by always staying on top of industry trends to produce cutting edge products, right?
Right.
Something simple like that. Obviously, we'll go deeper into that. And the third one would be, what are your tactics? You know, how are you increasing that? We talked about social earlier and how amazing it's free. You can't beat that.
Right.
And advertising on social is, oh my goodness. I mean, talk about changing the industry as a whole. Social media is amazingly affordable for a business owner. You can spend less than $1,000 and have your brand everywhere. It's amazing to be able to do that as a business owner,
right,
to go in there and do that. But you can also use tactics like email newsletters, social media campaigns, blogging, hey, public speaking. I know a lot of people don't like to do it, but it's good to go out there, speak to your communities, you know, contact your business journals. I always tell folks that's a great one. That's a good start because you'll start building up those publications. The more people hear you, the more you're going to get picked up. And there's nothing better than getting someone contacting you for a media hit instead of you reaching out. But it takes time to get there. So understand your tactics and then have a deadline. Set one on yourself. Like, I want to get this done and keep doing it. I know my story, my pain point, 4 years it took me as a publicist reaching out to the networks to hope and pray they'll call me back.
Right.
And now they call me and answer me within 10 minutes, which is awesome. But it wasn't that always that easy. It was a lot of, you know, crying in the corner. And like you said at the beginning, yes, all my years of military service and everything else I've done, being an entrepreneur is very trying.
Well, and being one of America's leading advocates for veteran entrepreneurs and the warrior class across America is a very noble cause. Eric Mitchell, thank you for doing that. Thank you for helping us today with some great advice for entrepreneurs. And if our audience wants to get more, they'll go to lifeflipmedia.com. You can talk to Eric yourself, lifeflipmedia.com. That's about it for my time today. Thank you very much, Eric. Certainly appreciate it. And don't forget, we need to always support our veterans. Always. I'm Alan Taylor. This is Entrepreneur Weekly.
This program is copyrighted by Entrepreneur Media Incorporated.